will stay in Washington to get caught up on the tax bill that appears will get a vote today in the U.S. Senate. There will be corporate taxes cut. There are estimates that lower-income Americans would actually pay more. We'll explain that. This morning, Wisconsin Republican Senator Ron Johnson said he's a yes on the bill. He had been a holdout. We have two guests to get us all caught up to the minute here on what's happening. Heather Long is a reporter for The Washington Post and joins me from Washington. Heather, I can't imagine how busy the day is, and I am so appreciative of you being able to join us here today. Thank you so much.
It's good to be here.
Mary Agnes Carey covers healthcare for Kaiser Health News, where she's a senior correspondent. And yes, this is a tax bill, but there's actually a lot of healthcare in here as well. So, Mary, I'm so glad to talk to you again as well.
Thanks for having me.
What questions do you still have about the tax bill as we head towards what looks like a vote today? 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. You can tweet me at WeberTom1, and don't call or text if you're driving. Heather, it occurs to me if we had done this exact conversation just 1 hour ago, the conversation would be very different. What is the latest on what we know about whether this tax bill is a go?
That's right. It is definitely a go now. They have the 50 votes that they need in just the last few minutes. There were three holdout senators. They could only afford to lose two. But Jeff Flake of Arizona has just said he will also vote for the bill. That gives them 50 votes. Majority Leader McConnell is incredibly happy right now. And they look like they're going to do this very soon.
So Jeff Flake, the U.S. senator from Arizona, who has spoken out against President Trump in many ways and in his book that came out earlier, he had been a holdout. What is he saying about why he is now a yes vote on this bill?
Yes, it's really interesting. As you were saying earlier, this is much more than a tax debate in the Senate. Jeff Flake says that he was promised or assured by his party that they would be able to find a solution for the Dreamers, for the young people who are in this country without official papers, and that they would be able to stay in the United States. And so he basically traded his vote on the tax bill to protect some of those young illegal immigrants.
Oh, so the Dreamers was not at all a part of the debate here today. So he is saying yes on the tax bill if you promise to fix this, what we've been talking about with the DACA recipients and the DREAM Act. So he tied it to that issue.
That's right. Yes, it's raising a lot of eyebrows as people try to analyze. He was originally, last night, the big holdup was he and Bob Corker, another person, senator from Tennessee who is not very fond of the president. Both Flake and Corker are retiring after the end of their terms, and they were both very upset at how much money this bill would add to the national debt. Yesterday we learned that even after accounting for economic growth from the bill, it would still add $1 trillion to the nation's already sizable debt. Corker and Flake said, you know, that's just too much for us. We want to see that number come down, and we're not going to be able to vote. But they've been talking all night, and it looks like in the end they were able to get Senator Flake to abandon some of those concerns about the debt, and if he could get this potential win. On immigration.
So with the three vote margin that the Republicans have, you had mentioned they could only afford to lose two, which would put them at 50-50 if all the Democrats vote no, which I think we expect will happen. And then Vice President Pence would be the tie-breaking vote. So just remind us, at this point, Corker and then I think Maine's Susan Collins, are they confirmed no's?
They're not confirmed no's, particularly Susan Collins, but it's Corker looks like he'll vote no, but we're not sure at the moment about Collins. So she had wanted a number of changes that she felt would help the middle class more. It looked like they were in serious discussions with her to potentially allow, at the moment, the Senate bill eliminates the ability for Americans to do any state and local tax deductions. And so that about a third of Americans do itemize their taxes. Most people do who itemize are taking a deduction for, say, the property taxes that you're paying, among other state and local taxes. So she wanted to do what the House bill had done, which is still allow people to deduct local property taxes up to $10,000. But it doesn't look like that provision will be added in now.
Heather Long with us from the Washington Post. Mary Agnes Carey here from Kaiser Health News as well. We're going over what is really at this point minute by minute updates on what now appears to be a pending vote today in the U.S. Senate. The leader, Mitch McConnell, just in the last few minutes before this show went on the air, said we have the votes. And as you heard Heather say there, it means they have at least the 50 votes. And if it does, in fact, pan out to be 50-50, then the Vice President, Mike Pence, would cast that tie-breaking vote. Mary Agnes Carey, we've talked about, and we're going to talk more about the tax provisions, and we talked about some of the bartering happening this morning, for example, on immigration and DACA. What are you hearing about the health care elements of this bill and whether they've been changed at all today?
I don't think so. I mean, one thing about the Senate bill, it's not in the House bill, but Senate report, House Republicans, rather, would certainly warm to it, I think, is a repeal of the Affordable Care Act's requirement that most people get health insurance or pay a fine. As we know, this has been something that Republicans hate in the law. It's one of the baselines of the law, if you will, because if you don't have everybody in the risk pool, the healthy people balancing the sick people, then the only people who will probably get in will be the sicker individuals, and they'll get in and the healthy people might stay away. So this has been viewed by analysts as particularly problematic for the Affordable Care Act. The Congressional Budget Office, which is the official scorekeeper for Congress, has basically said that if the individual mandate repeal stayed in the tax bill, that became law, you'd have 13 million fewer people over the next decade without health insurance, and premiums would rise 10% more per year than they would without the change. So Republicans are looking at it as a revenue raiser to pay for the tax bill, but it is really going to be a very strong hit to the Affordable Care Act if it becomes law.
I'm just curious, very briefly, Mary, how does getting rid of that mandate, the individual mandate that we all buy health insurance, how does that actually save the government money, which they're, as you noted, they're then using in the calculations to lower the cost of the tax bill?
If you don't require people to have insurance, the government saves money on the subsidies. 8 out of 10 people on the Affordable Care Act get a subsidy to help them pay for their health insurance. There's a separate subsidy that also pays for cost sharing out of pocket costs. So they would save money there. And you would also save money on people enrolling in the Medicaid program, because that, people wouldn't enroll in that either if they didn't have to have coverage. So lifting of the mandate saves the federal government money because they're spending less on the subsidies for coverage and possibly on the Medicaid program.
But if you still do buy health insurance on the marketplace and you're eligible, you can still get the subsidies, right? The subsidies don't go away in whole. Is that correct?
No, they won't go away. And what will be ironic is if the health insurance premiums become more expensive, as analysts predict, because you don't have healthy people in the risk pool, then the people who get those subsidies, the cost of that insurance will also increase. And so the value of the subsidies will increase. So the government will have to pay more for that. But no, if you qualify, the subsidies would still be there.
Heather, on the fact that, all the writing says tax bill, how much of this, and from what we heard Mary talk about, how significant of that? How much of the tax bill actually is a health care bill?
Well, it's kind of a complicated question, but in the sense that, as she was mentioning, that the House bill does not include this health care provision. The Senate bill does. So the two still have to be reconciled before they send the final version to the president's desk. So it's possible health care will not end up in this tax bill. The details are obviously still forthcoming. But I would say the heart of this bill is still giving a massive tax cut to corporations. President Trump makes no bones about this. This is the largest tax cut for large corporations in U.S. history, going from a top rate of 35% down to 20%. That's in both bills. The Senate bill makes that tax cut for businesses permanent, while if the tax cut for you and me and all the listeners goes away after 2025. So that's really the heart of this bill is still a tax plan. But yes, there are a number of other provisions that are trying to execute other Republican ideas. Another one that a lot of people have been pointing out is it does things like allow parents to start a 529 savings plan for college when their child is still in utero. So, you know, there's some funny provisions like this sprinkled throughout the bill that are trying to promote various GOP ideals.
So wait, so what you just said then is what? A hat tip in a forthcoming abortion debate?
Potentially, but it's that trying to recognize unborn children type notion.
It's in using the vehicle of a tax bill and therefore this college savings program, we can put into federal law a recognition of the rights of fetuses or something like that. Is that,
yes.
is that
that's yeah, what you're, that, you're saying it better than I am. Yes. Thank you.
Heather Long with me from the Washington Post, Mary Agnes Carey from Kaiser Health News. We're taking your questions too about, again, this is very fast moving here, although in the last few minutes, it really does appear that the votes are there and the vote will happen today in the Senate. As Heather noted, it's not over today. There still have to be these differences between the House and Senate version panned out. But this is a very significant day in the life of this bill, which has been a very short life because it was only introduced here in recent weeks. But what questions do you have for my guests here today? 1-800-242-2828. You can tweet me at WeberTom1. Let's go to Cynthia in St. Paul. Hi, Cynthia. What's your question? Well, that's not so much of a question, Cynthia, but if you can hear me, somehow the phone got disconnected there, but give us a call back, 1-800-242-2828. Let's see if Deb in Bemidji is there. Hi, Deb. Can you hear me? Hi, Deb. Go right ahead. Cynthia, are you back there? We're just going to go back and forth. Hi, Cynthia. Are you back on the line? Well, I don't know what's happening to the phones here. I think what's happening here, though, Heather, is that Cynthia had a question about the alternative minimum tax, which, first of all, just explain that and then give us an update on what's the status of that in this bill.
Yes, it's an excellent question. The alternative minimum tax started in 1969 as a way to prevent really wealthy people from taking advantage of too many tax breaks. So it's sort of the Warren Buffett, super billionaire, likes to talk about how it's unfair that he pays a lower tax rate than his secretary. And the idea behind the alternative minimum tax was that people would have to calculate their taxes twice, once with all the tax breaks they could find, and then another time with limitations on how many tax breaks they could take. And then they would have to pay the higher tax bill, which was usually the one that was calculated under the alternative minimum tax rules. To give a very concrete example, the 1 year of tax returns we have for Donald Trump, 2005, because of the alternative minimum tax, he had to pay over $10 million more in taxes that year. So it gives you a sense of how much of an impact it does have on many super wealthy families. The Republican bills, both the House and the Senate bill, fully repeal, so they fully get rid of the alternative minimum tax. No one would pay that alternative minimum tax in the United States. It's obviously being seen as a huge win for many wealthy Americans.
We're not entirely sure we have our phones working at this moment. So if you have a question and you're on the phone and you're able to tweet me, that might be a better route here in the next few minutes as we try to figure that out. On the technical side of things of live radio here, give me a tweet at WeberTom1 and I will ask your question of our guests. Now, Mary Agnes Carey, one of the conversations about this tax bill also has to do with the debate over whether it creates a deficit, whether it adds to the deficit. And frankly, we've heard comments from the president and from supporters that question, that say, no, we're fine on the deficit. But all the other studies into it suggest otherwise. First of all, talk about that a little bit. And I'm bringing you into that conversation, Mary, because it suggests, and I wonder if that then leads to healthcare policy ramifications down the road.
Well, there you go. It sure does. And as you've noted, there have been different groups, I want to say, and Heather, correct me if I'm wrong, Joint Committee on Taxation, Congressional Budget Office, that have come out and scored this bill and say that it does add to the deficit over time. Republicans are arguing that basically if you give tax cuts, especially to business, they're going to give more money to their employees for raises. They may create more jobs. Those would all in turn generate revenue that will take care of this deficit issue. But if in fact, as has been predicted, the deficit does increase, it would trigger automatic pay cuts to Medicare. There's a law in Congress, I think it's from 2010, called Pay As You Go, but of course we have to abbreviate everything, so we call it PAYGO.
That's
right.
Okay.
There you go, Washington alphabet soup, that requires cuts across the board. For Medicare, that would be a 4% cut, $25 billion a year, and the thought is it would most likely come out of payments to providers. Here I'm talking about hospitals, doctors, labs that Medicare beneficiaries go to get tests and so on. And so if you make those cuts, this is kind of a backdoor cut to Medicare. Now, Medicaid would be shielded from the automatic spending cuts, but this particular provision and effect on Medicare, the tax bill, has really fallen under the radar. But you're going to start, I think, if the Senate bill in fact passes today as is predicted and they go to a conference, you're going to hear loud and clear from AARP, right? I would assume the American Medical Association, the American Hospital Association, all the groups that also protect and fight for the Affordable Care Act will be pushing back against this provision, because in the Senate, you need to have you need to have 60 votes to waive this PAYGO provision, but mm-hmm. I don't think you're going to get it. You just went over the math with the Republicans. The divide is 52 Republicans, 48 Democrats, and as you wisely noted, none of those Democrats are going to vote for this tax bill, so they sure wouldn't vote to lift the PAYGO rule. So this is going to be a problem for this measure as it goes down for more debate and analysis.
And so because we saw so many of those organizations you listed and more during the health care repeal debate, when we had three different versions in the final realm of things that failed, those organizations, Mary, were very loud and not loud, but like very prominent and public in their opposition. So what you're saying is that same roster of organizations might be gearing up for a similar type press?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I mean, Heather has talked about this. The main takeaways, I think, for most people on the Senate tax bill or the House tax bill has been the impact on the different income earners, the fact that the corporate tax rates are permanent, the ones for individuals were not. All throughout, earlier in the week and late last week, there was this big debate whether we'd even have support. But I think now, if in fact it does pass the Senate, as it goes to that conference committee, that's where the House and the Senate get together to work out differences, I think you will have healthcare groups, seniors groups, provider groups really turn up the volume and turn up the pressure on Congress because of the Medicare provision, because of the individual mandate provision. You're going to hear a lot more. And then there's also this whole provision about it's in the House bill, but not the Senate bill, not letting people do the medical expense deduction anymore. And that could be that's problematic for people with high costs, people who might be paying for long-term care, chronic illness, chemotherapy. That's 9 million people a year who would lose that if it were adopted in the conference.
And just so people know, here in Minnesota, we have three Republicans in our congressional delegation, Tom Emmer, Jason Lewis, and Eric Paulson. They all voted yes on the tax bill in the House version when it went through. Now we're going to have the Senate vote today, and the two Democrats in the Senate, Amy Klobuchar and Al Franken, are very strong no votes. And then if, as it appears expected, they will pass it in the Senate today with those votes, Heather Long, it goes back to this conference. And then each chamber, so every member of our Minnesota delegation is going to have to vote on this one more time after today. Is that right?
That's correct. That's correct.
And so what's the timeline here? And talk about how quick this timeline is. It seems very fast.
It has been incredibly fast. They are voting on this just over 2 weeks after it was first introduced. So this whole process has taken a month for the House and the Senate if it passes today, to pass these bills. The optimists are saying it will take that they could still get this done by Christmas if they go through conference committee and then vote. But if you talk to most folks on the Hill, they think it may bleed into early January before, you know, before it's actually on the president's desk.
I heard one comment made that Congress doesn't even rename post offices this quickly to compare how fast this has been going. So
it's incredibly fast. I'll make two comments on that. I mean, people on the right, on the Republican side, they note, though, that Republicans have been working for years on overhauling the tax code. There have been many prior bills that have been introduced and debated. There's been a lot of hearings over the years. So in that sense, it's not like this idea just came out of the blue to do this. I mean, a lot of stuff has been hashed out for many years now. That said, the details matter. Like this healthcare detail, huge, huge ramifications. You know, we haven't been able to analyze how all this stuff works together in a 500-page bill. And that has been very fast. We still don't have the bill. They're going to vote on the Senate in a matter of hours on something that we still have not seen the final text of. You know, that rubs people, I think, the wrong way.
Let's try, as we talk here with Heather Long from The Washington Post and Mary Agnes Carey from Kaiser Health News, let's see if those phones are working. Deb in Bemidji, are you there?
Hi, yes, I am.
Yes, I'm glad to hear you. And go ahead with your comment or your question.
Okay. Well, one of your speakers just kind of alluded to it. I'm actually worried about, and that is, why isn't there more of an outrage over this proposed this tax proposal? It, by all accounts, it's going to add to the deficit. It's going to be worse for middle class people. I'm not really worried so much for myself, but for my children. I've got one child with $70,000 in grad school debt, and what the heck is going to happen? I'm actually, I don't know if you can hear it in my voice, but my heart's been pounding today, and I'm actually terrified as to what might end up happening here. And I don't understand how the Republicans can wholeheartedly endorse something like this, something like what they're proposing.
Yeah.
And why aren't we out, you know, in huge parades, you know, protesting this? I'm very concerned. That's my comment. And if anybody can shed some light as to how Republicans can actually go forward with this and pretend like it's useful or helpful for people, I'd appreciate knowing that.
Deb, thanks so much for the call. Obviously, Heather, someone very opposed to this idea. What of her comments? She's perplexed as to why, you know, not obviously she's coming from a perspective of opposing it, but she's perplexed as to why this is happening. So what would you add to what would you say to what Deb just asked?
So the best argument in favor of this bill is that the United States has had has been growing the economy at a very sluggish pace since the recession. And, you know, President Trump on the campaign trail would talk about how this is the slowest recovery since the Depression era. And that is backed up by numbers. It has been a very slow climb back from that Great Recession. And the idea here is that if you cut these corporate taxes and give most middle class families a bit of a tax cut, that's going to juice the economy more.
A temporary tax cut, though.
For individuals.
For the individuals, yeah.
And they're right. Even the Joint Committee on Tax and all the forecasters from the left to the right agree that there will be some economic pickup from this bill. You know, the debate is how much economic pickup there will be and whether it's worth it to go deeper into debt, as the caller was saying, to likely exacerbate inequality in this country in order to get that growth. And that's really the left versus the right debate on this bill.
Let's go back to the phones here. Laura is in Mankato. Hi, Laura. What would you like to ask here today?
Hello. Yes, I'm calling in with kind of a question to see on the healthcare end of this. I work in that space every day. I'm on the streets talking about health insurance to individuals and options. And one of the biggest factors that I see with the law and the changes on our plans today relates to the fact that all policies today have an unlimited lifetime maximum that applies, meaning if you're sick, there's no cap on what the insurance company will pay towards your expenses in your lifetime. That to me is really wonderful to hear, but in the cost side of the picture and kind of, you know, where our rates are going, that's kind of an out of control provision that I just am wondering if there's anything that is in the bill or the proposal that connects on that topic, the unlimited lifetime maximum provision.
Mary, thoughts on that question?
There's nothing that relates to that particularly. You'd have to get into the elements of the Affordable Care Act to make that change. But the bigger threat to the Affordable Care Act and all the provisions of it, like no lifetime, there's no annual caps, that kind of thing, is really when you look at this individual mandate penalty, we're sending that. It's in the Senate bill. It's not in the House bill, but House Republicans have made it clear that it wouldn't be a problem for them. And the deal is, if you don't require people to buy health insurance, then you don't have a balanced risk pool. You don't have sick people and well people all in the same pool to balance out the cost. And so the thought is, if you don't require people to purchase health insurance, that over a decade, not only will you have 13 million fewer people insured, not having insurance, but those premiums that already rise for a variety of reasons every year, competitive, the number of insurers in a particular area, the particular health care, medical costs of an area, then in addition to those factors, you're going to see another 10% jump just because you don't have the individual mandate. And that could have some really tough impacts for the market.
Let me ask you another quick question here, Mary, about what we had also seen, because there was this bipartisan proposal in the Senate from a Republican and a Democrat, Lamar Alexander and Patty Murray, to, I mean, what they referred to it as the short-term fix for the Obamacare system, do some technical changes to help out with some of the payments here and there. Is that at all being added on to this? There seems to be a lot of stuff added on to the tax bill. I know that that bill is probably going to be in the mix as we come to the end of the year with budget debates and stuff. I'm just wondering if it's coming up today in this tax bill.
It's come up over the week in respect to Susan Collins, a Republican of Maine that you mentioned before, and I think Heather said earlier she's still on an undecided vote. She has said that she wants to see the cost-sharing subsidies that are in those, that's in that Alexander Murray bill you referenced. These are the additional money that helps people who make about $30,000 and under a year, helps them with all their out-of-pocket costs. But she wants that money restored. She knows it can't, she being Senator Collins, knows it can't go into the tax bill for a variety of reasons, but that to be taken care of in separate legislation. And to that point, Susan Collins also has a bill, I think it's with Bill Nelson of Florida, that would try to give insurers additional money to help their highest cost cases. They call this reinsurance money. Mm-hmm. But she has said several times that Senator Mitch McConnell, who's the majority leader, has promised her that both of those things will be taken care of. That seems kind of up in the air to me, because you have Republicans definitely in the Senate and absolutely in the House that have expressed opposition to either giving insurers more money to having the federal government rather fund these cost-sharing subsidies or giving insurers more money for reinsurance. So there is kind of a bridge, if you will, between the two. It's not absolutely in the tax bill, but Susan Collins has been talking a lot about that.
We're talking about the tax bill today, that as we've seen developments here just in the last hour, it does appear the Republicans now do have the votes, and there will be a vote today on the Senate version. It's not over yet in that regards on the legislative side of things, because there has to be these differences between the House bill and the Senate bill ironed out. And so one more vote in each chamber is the belief here and the expectation here on this tax bill. I want to talk, Heather Long from The Washington Post here briefly, about higher education, graduate students especially, and undergraduate. There were protests at 40 universities across the country earlier this week on Wednesday, including over at the University of Minnesota, right in front of Northrop Auditorium. And here's just a little bit of what one of the grad students who spoke, Tracy Blasenheim, said at that event.
The passage of this bill will trigger a crisis in graduate education. At last week's Grads United Forum, we heard from numerous students who will be forced to drop out of their programs simply due to these tax increases. As long as poor and marginalized students face disproportionate pressures and barriers, a single bill can always threaten to restrict graduate education to the extremely privileged and wealthy.
What's happening with higher education in this bill that is causing protests at 40 universities?
So the graduate students and college students get hit pretty hard in the House tax bill. The provisions that that young man was just very concerned about are actually not in the Senate bill.
Okay.
So this is one of those big question marks that's going to have to be ironed out. And I would say the emails and calls that I get a ton are from folks like that young man we just heard from the grad students, and from elderly people who are worried about the medical deduction going away. That's another provision that exists in the House bill, but not in the Senate bill. So I'd say college students and the elderly have the most at stake as this process goes forward.
And for grad students specifically, just so people understand it, you know, a lot of grad students get these stipends, and I believe that part is listed as income. But then when your tuition is waived, which is, as I understand it, Heather, very common for grad students, right now that tuition that's waived is not counted as income. The House bill would count it as income, which increases your tax liability for a lot of these students two or three times.
Yes, particularly for science and engineering students, the fees and the tuition there could be, let's say, $40,000. So if they're getting $20,000 to $30,000 of that waived, and that suddenly becomes income on their taxes, that's vaulting them into a much, much higher tax bracket. You know, they would be at like a zero tax bracket or hardly any to begin with, and they would go into, you know, a 20-something tax bracket. So, yes, it's a huge change.
You mentioned the elderly as well, and let's, in that regard, go to George, who's in White Bear Lake, who I have a note here who says you are elderly, but you're young at heart, George, so thanks for calling.
Well, my comment is I guess you're looking at eliminating the deduction for medical expenses. You know, when you get old, you get sick, and you get a lot of medical expenses that are not covered by insurance. And I don't know why they want to hurt old people who are sick, have high medical expenses, not covered by insurance. It's a real puzzle to me. Maybe your experts can answer that. Thank you.
Mary Agnes Carey, Heather alluded to this a moment ago, but just explain it a little more. What is George talking about? I think it's just in the House bill, but talk about that a little bit.
It's just in the House bill, and basically, as current law now is, if you have medical expenses that exceed 10% of your adjusted gross income, and it's about 9 million people took advantage of this deduction in 2015, you can deduct your medical expenses on your tax return. And what a number I thought that was really interesting that we had in one of our Kaiser Health News stories was in 2015, that group of 9 million people took $87 billion of deduction. So if you're taking this, you have medical expenses. Maybe it's for, you know, you've got someone in your family, maybe in a nursing home, chronic care, you've got a chronic child with high cost expenses. And so basically the House wants to take that out, not let you have that deduction. It's not in their, it's in their bill, rather. It's not in the Senate bill. But I think it's one of those things, as they go forward into conference, you will get a lot of pressure from all the same groups we're talking about, the patient groups, seniors groups, that are going to want that not adopted in the final tax bill that would go to both chambers for a vote.
I just want to say on a quick technical note, you've heard a couple beeps as Mary was talking. We're not beeping her. She's not swearing, I promise you. It's just something something with the phone there. So I just want to let you know that here as we talk about this tax bill. Heather Long from The Washington Post. Donald Trump, the president, says he will pay more and all of his rich friends will pay more as well. Is that true?
No, the Washington Post fact-check team looked at that yesterday and said that is absolutely a false statement that he made this week in Missouri as he's trying to sell this tax bill. There's a number of provisions we talk that would benefit him and his family. We talked earlier in this program about how eliminating the alternative minimum tax, the AMT, would have saved him in 2005 over $10 million. And that's just one of many expenses. The Senate bill actually reduces the top, what you might think of as the millionaire tax bracket. They get a tax cut as well, and another one a lot of people point to is the estate tax. Republicans often like to call it the death tax. So when you pass property or other assets down to the next generation, at the moment, you can do up to $5.5 million to your heirs with tax-free, and after that, you pay a 40% rate. And that tax, it goes away entirely in the House bill and in the Senate bill. It's the threshold is raised from, is doubled from $5.5 million to $11 million. So all these types of provisions would be a huge, huge help to Donald Trump and his family.
And his family, too. So Ivanka, you know, when Donald Trump passes, I mean, that's literally what you're talking about there with the estate tax. What about some other provisions here as we wrap up here, Heather? Why is drilling, and is it still in there, we will now be able to drill in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge in Alaska? Is that still in the tax bill, and why?
Yeah, that's a good question. We don't have the final text of the bill, so it's unclear if it's actually written into the tax bill document or if it will be, much like we were talking earlier with Jeff Flake's request for something on the Dreamers, if it would be a promise that would happen as an amendment or would happen in a bill down the road. But that was a change that was done to get Lisa Murkowski of Alaska's vote. She was one of the three who voted over the summer against the health care bill, who effectively killed that bill over the summer. So they were very concerned about her vote this time. But for years, she and her father before her had been working to open that drilling in parts of Alaska. And so she wanted that more than anything else, it seems.
Let's take at least one more call here. Peyton in Minneapolis. We're near the end of the hour, but if you have a quick question, Peyton, go for it.
Yeah, thanks for the show. My question assumes a lot of things, I suppose, going forward. I think you've done a good job of presenting this in an even-handed way. My question is, could a Democratic Congress in the next couple of years how easy or difficult would it be for them to overturn some of these provisions in this bill or bend them in a more populist way?
Heather?
Well, you're right. That first of all, any tax bill that goes through usually requires a number of tweaks because, again, we haven't had time. Most people don't even know what's in this bill, including lawmakers who are voting on it, we found. So there's going to need to be a lot of tweaks in the coming months, particularly on the corporate side, I think. A lot of unintended consequences are going to happen. And I think your caller goes right to the heart that over the coming years, there's like just what we were talking about with that caller who was elderly and who has a lot of medical expenses. There's no way lawmakers are going to stand by and allow people to go bankrupt who are trying to pay for their Alzheimer's care or for their other medical expenses. So I suspect there will be tweaks down the road.
Final minute here. So just in a few seconds, both of you. Even if it passes the Senate today, there would still be the next couple steps. But just big picture, Heather, in a few seconds, do you think the tax bill will get to the president's desk?
Yes, I think this is going to be a big victory for Donald Trump. I know everyone's talking about the Michael Flynn today, but I think he's going to end today smiling.
Mary Agnes Carey, your thoughts?
It may get to the president's desk, but watch the process for whether it's the next few weeks or into January, because this bill could change substantially.
Thank you both for being here. Mary Agnes Carey from Kaiser Health News, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Heather Long from The Washington Post, I appreciate your time as well.
Thank you. Take care.
More throughout the day. The vote is expected to come sometime today. Check it out, mprnews.org.